It's time for Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Across the street, across the state, across the nation, and on the World Wide Web. Viewpoints is where you can express your point of view. And now, the host of Viewpoints, Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. Well, we were talking last week with Jerry Hanifin about Social Security. And, of course, we keep thinking about Social Security in relationship to retired couples. But there are instances we're going to find out here in a few moments from our weekly conversation with Jerry Hanifin of the Estate Planning Center in Morehead City that the whole subject of Social Security and retirement benefits also needs to needs a little attention and special attention and care for singles, and particularly widows and single women, and predominantly because quite often, and I'm looking forward to hearing this from our guest, Jerry Hanifin. Of course, Jerry joins us each Friday afternoon here on Viewpoints. Jerry, thanks for taking the time to be with us. And I have a theory on this related to the upcoming topic, and that is that we're looking at years where women, particularly single women, but also widows, have it's been assumed that they would be taken care of, or that their financial needs would be well in order, but that's not always the case, is it?
Not at all. And, you know, some of the toughest scenarios for me as a planner, Lockwood, is when I engage a couple and we become friends and I work with them for years, and then one of the spouses is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
And that meeting just before, sometimes they know that they're going to pass. I've had the some of the husbands look me in the eye and say, Jerry, is my wife going to be fine mm-hmm. with what we've done together?
Right.
And will you take care of her after I'm gone? And I honestly answer them, yes, yes, I do. And that's becoming a larger part of my business and practice. Oftentimes, and it's not necessarily a stereotype, but oftentimes, because of the different duties in the household, there's a delegation
right.
of duties, and it's not always the same, but usually one person, for practicality's sake, takes up maybe running the checkbook and the finances
mm-hmm.
when the other one doesn't. And the stereotype is that the male does and the female, but that's definitely changing, as I've seen for sure. So with this, we're going to focus, again, we help the males out all the time and the couples, but we want to really just take some time and just have a luncheon at the bistro talking to women about money. And one of the circumstances, if they're single women and not widowed, is that still, unfortunately, Lockwood, the Bureau of Labor Statistics report that the mean or average earnings for all women are approximately 80% of what men earn.
So there's a 20% differential, 20%.
20% differential.
Wow.
So there's planning, and that scenario becomes even more important because they've got to make that dollar go a little bit further if they're single, for sure.
All right, and we went straight into the program, of course. Joining us this afternoon, Jerry Hanifin of the Estate Planning Center. And prior to entering into the conversation here on Viewpoints this afternoon, we had sort of been discussing this, so that's why I jumped right into it. But I think it's an important story, Jerry. And this event, by the way, and we're going to get into some more details, is taking place October 10th. Is that correct?
That's right, October 10th at Bistro by the Sea right here in Morehead City.
Okay, that's Thursday at lunch, right? Luncheon time?
That's correct.
All right.
If somebody's interested, any women out there, again, it's just specifically for women, widowed and single women, they can call Lori at area code 252-240-2461.
Okay, that's 240-2461. It's a 252 area code. And, of course, Jerry covers the region for the Estate Planning Center, and he's affiliated with the USA Financial Radio Network, which you hear a program every Sunday morning from 11 to noon here on Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Jerry, you know, I can look at the single women, those that have chosen not to have families or have been single for long periods of time and employed. They sort of, I would argue, have or posit anyhow, that they have some sort of a plan. But a lot of times, widows do not. And quite frankly, that's a life-changing experience, death of your helpmate, your husband, your spouse, that suddenly you're faced with. So this is kind of a shocking moment, I would think, for particularly widows.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's even as basic as just, you know, keeping a checkbook. They just haven't done it. It's not that they're not smart individuals. It's just that if they have not handled any aspect of it for so many years, they need to really be, taught how to get back on and handle these basic day-to-day things that are going on.
And then you add to that the changes in the laws that, well, a lot of people, and by the way, it doesn't have to be gender specific, a lot of people have just sort of taken in stride. They haven't worried about, as we've talked about just last week, the potential changes in the Social Security laws and compensation packages. We all, myself included, we just sort of take things in stride. And when you say, and you've mentioned many times before, that Social Security represents easily a third, if not more, of folks' retirement packages, this is something that's pretty critical, it seems to me.
It is. I mean, it is. And they really, that's really why we feel like, you know, they're underserved a large portion of the time. And just looking at some statistics, 80 to 90% of women will be solely responsible for their finances at some point in their lives. So it's the odds are just overwhelming that, of course, they live longer than us men, Lockwood, statistically.
Well, part of that is because men it's because men do a lot of dumb things, but then we won't go there.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a matter of fact, it's funny because there are some things, and we point this out, men are better at women in that 80% of those who lost their jobs, so being recession-proof, so that they don't get fired as often. They also, as investors, earn 1.4% more on their average than men with investment portfolios. So making some bad mistakes, you're absolutely right.
Wow.
Yeah, they tend to admit mistakes sooner than men also. I know that might be kind of alarming to you.
Yeah, that doesn't help me at all.
And they don't acknowledge what they don't know also, which is kind of interesting. And they're more risk adverse. That's one of the main reasons why they won't take some of the risks in investment. And I see it all the time that men are willing to take.
So I think that's an important aspect. So this program, this coming Thursday, October 10th, again, being put on by the Estate Planning Center in Morehead City, is as much oriented towards those folks that are more risk averse. They're less inclined to get involved in risky products and portfolio adjustments. So that's interesting. So your program that Thursday is focused on folks that understand the issue and concerns of security.
That's right. And it's just, you know, single women, widowed, and divorced women specifically. And you know what we like about this is that women make better planners because, again, they're...
You're hurting my feelings now, Jerry. But then, go ahead.
Oh, this is something, too, you probably would be surprised to hear, that women are more likely to ask for driving directions.
Absolutely not. Don't believe in that. Never have. Jerry Hannafin of the Estate Planning Center, and we're talking about preparing for retirement. You know, I want to go to something quickly, Jerry, because you've always said you have a motto there at the Estate Planning Center. Share that with us, if you will, please.
Yeah, our motto here is just in line with USA Financial. And I don't know, a lot of folks here listen to the USA Financial talk show on Sundays at, on 107 at the talk station from 11 to 12. And what it is it's simply plan first, invest second. So we're really big on planning, and I just joke about, like I did last week, you know, people going to, you know, Lowe's and buying all this stuff to build a house, but they don't have a blueprint. And so it happens all the time. So we're big on planning first and then investing.
You know, as we wrap things up on that subject, and I think that's important, a good comparison one more time, that for widows, for single women, by the way, any age level that you're specifically looking at for this program, because obviously this is a free luncheon, is that correct?
Yeah, okay. It sure is. I mean, we're going to cover topics of Social Security and these kind of things. So I guess it's more for those nearing or in retirement. Mm-hmm. But certainly any single widowed or divorced women are welcome.
Okay, and that phone number, if anybody is interested in participating, one more time?
Yeah, it's area code 252-240-2461.
All right, that's 240-2461, 252 area code, by the way. Of course, Modern Technology, the Estate Planning Center, and that website for you, Jerry, is?
EstatePlanningCTR, that's short for center.com.
EstatePlanningCTR.com. You know, Jerry, as we wrap things up, just going back to the analogy of going to the home building supply store, you need a plan to buy those products. So that's what you're going to be giving these folks when they meet on October 10th at the Bistro in Morehead City?
Yeah, we're not going to actually give them the plan there. Folks hire us to build plans for them.
Right.
But what we will be doing is talking about different components that should be considered in an overall plan.
That's the Estate Planning Center, and we'll be chatting about upcoming events again in October and November. Jerry, as always, thank you very much for being with us. And that phone number, one more time, is 252 area code?
Right, 240-2461.
And the website is EstatePlanningCTR.com. Jerry, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you. And remember, like we say here, it's plan first, invest second.
Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. Before we get to our regularly scheduled program with our guest, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, I do want to remind everyone, the North Carolina Seafood Festival underway this weekend, and I definitely want to remind you that the Blessing of the Fleet, which will begin at 10 a.m. at the North Carolina State Port, a moment of appreciation, memorial, remembrance, and a religious service, recognizing the lost lives of the fishermen and their families, and sort of a recognition of the role that fishing has played, both biblically and figuratively, in North Carolina's culture and its enterprises. So that being said, to remind you, Sunday, 10 a.m., here live on the talk station, we will be airing the Blessing of the Fleet from the Morehead City State Port. And I do hope that folks will, well, first and foremost, consider attending. Again, it is a church service. And then secondly, if not, if they will listen to the program. And yes, we will be recording it and possibly re-airing it at some point later in the week. But I do want to remind everyone, of course, the North Carolina Seafood Festival underway as we speak this afternoon here on Viewpoints. And as always, it's a pleasure at this time of the day to have joining us Francis DeLuca. If he's not traveling somewhere around the country, which I know that he's on the road as we speak, not driving, but he's in some point. Well, as a matter of fact, I understand he might be in Washington, D.C., where he is taking a firsthand look at what Andrea Tanteras calls the national slim down. Others call it a partial shutdown. Some just call it a shutdown. And with that, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute joins us. Francis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Always good to be with you. And just came up here to see what Washington looks like when there's nobody working.
Well, apparently the law enforcement arms of all the bureaucratic agencies are working. National Park Service, kicking people off Park Service property, things of that nature. Putting a barbed wire, I understand, around the World War II monument. What is it like in Washington as we speak?
Well, I have not been down to the mall to see the mall or anything like that. It came up.
You haven't been to the Smithsonian? I'm sure you could.
Haven't been to any of the. You just came in here. I'm actually here for a work related event. But it is interesting that anybody who's been to Washington knows that the monuments you're talking about, the World War II Memorial, the Vietnam, the Lincoln Memorial, those are open 24 hours a day. Anytime, day or night, you can walk around them, walk into them. you know, in for them to have taken the steps and spent the money and had personnel go out there and barricade them, and mm-hmm. not only barricade them, but repeatedly barricade them, and then, you know, the latest has been they've now been wiring it together so you can't just pull it down. I mean, this is a obvious attempt to try and make this as painful to as many people as they can. It's kind of like the talk about the sequester.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a comparison here, and the idea here is to make it painful so people will knuckle under. It also is an indication to me that this is a presidential priority to visit pain on the taxpayers of America, but not to fix the problem. And I obviously there's a little political remark in that, somewhat biased. What is the mood in Washington?
It seems like it's a holiday. I mean, really? Most of the people know they're going to get paid. The rest of the, you know, remember, there's a lot of people in Washington who don't work for the government.
Can't be that many.
Yeah, well, but they're actually, I saw them on the way to work this morning, all eight of them. but you know, the metro is empty. The streets aren't crowded. A lot of people in the parks. A lot of people walking around. So I bet you
there are some really good sales deals right now. In Washington.
And the restaurants aren't very busy.
I bet you there is a great opportunity to get a great meal at a very reduced price. I tell you, there's no better time to go to Washington, D.C. than when it's shut down.
There's also a lot of private museums. You know, you've got the National Geographic. You've got lots of museums around there operated by private institutions.
Hmm.
You know, Mount Vernon. Private,
right.
You know, that is not the Park Service, even though the Park Service tried to close Mount Vernon down, but it's not operated by the Park Service. It's operated by a private women's group.
Pardon me, but let me interrupt you and say, now that that's been discovered, you can rest assured that an effort will be taken to bring it under the control of the National Park Service. You watch and see. But that's another topic.
The amazing thing, I think, right now with this shutdown is now Eastern North Carolina has a lot of military presence, mm-hmm. so it's feeling some of it. But by and large, it's not really affecting the country very much. I mean, essential services are going on, air traffic control, things like that. You know, most of what we deal with government, we deal with on a local basis.
Well,
that's a good thing.
Well, it is. But I also will say to you, I think there's a philosophical awareness now that so much of what we have become accustomed to is under the control of the federal government or, and you brought it up, state government as well. Everything from museums and parks and activities that we have, I think, corporately, willingly handed the deed over to one of these governmental entities, federal or state, and now those entities are ultimately in control. So I think this might be an epiphanal moment for the taxpayers when it comes to a time of saying, well, let's designate this area as a national park, which is theoretically designed to protect it and preserve it and, you know, sort of give it a good weight and control. But at the same time, you relinquish all authority and ability to use it if the government entity decides to shut it down. That being said, let's talk about North Carolina. Of course, here in eastern North Carolina, on the Outer Banks, National Park Service folks actually removed the people that were staying for fall vacation, fishing vacations. They had to exit the banks, core banks and Shackelford banks. And as a matter of fact, they are restricting access to those two facilities, which again goes back to what has been historically a public resource. Now it's a government resource, and the government has control of it. It seems to me that there's a potential here for a backlash.
It's funny. I actually had a friend who was on his first fishing trip out there, and they were in a cabin, and they got a knock on the door and had to leave. He was planning to spend the whole week there, and you know, and hopefully this does wake people up that you know, giving control of things over to the government is not necessarily preserving them for future mm-hmm. use.
And it also creates a tool, if you will, for that government entity, state or federal, to use against or to promote against a opposition or to promote some particular, I don't know, policy or philosophy. Okay, that being said, in North Carolina, what can North Carolina do about this? I know that there have been some success in some states where the states have stepped in. Am I correct on that?
Well, I don't know if I'd say success yet. I do know the one I've heard directly is that Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin has said he's going to keep the parks, the federal parks that are in Wisconsin, opened up. I don't know the legalities of that. It'd be nice to see if there was a way that for North Carolina to open up the national seashore there. A lot of fishermen, a lot of people rely on the tourist traffic for their livelihood. The mountains, you know, the parks in the mountains draw a lot of visitors this time of year because the leaves are starting to change. You know, for them to be shut down kind of really hurts the people who rely on that for income. You know, there's just a whole bunch of things like that that if there was any ability of the state to influence that, that would be nice. Of course, you get into all kinds of things that it's federal property and the state can't go on it and everything, but apparently in Wisconsin the governor may be trying to take some action to keep parks open.
I will follow up on that. Francis, and of course Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute is our guest, is joining us. He's in Washington, D.C. I'm curious, granted you're there in D.C., but I know that the Civitas Institute has been paying attention to the pulse of the state of North Carolina. Any poll numbers or any indication as to how the state perceives the events of this shutdown? Is there possibly a political backlash that might occur, either against the Republicans that have been somewhat demanding of the Senate that they negotiate, or the Senate and the President that doesn't want to negotiate, oddly enough?
Well, I think you're going to see favorability numbers or approval numbers for both for legislators as a whole, because this is a, you know, pretty much the people toss all politicians into the same bucket, state or federal legislators, and I think this is going to hurt Obama's numbers too. I don't think anybody comes out of this looking good. You know, but if you're a legislator, you can't look a whole lot worse than you already look.
Well, that being said, let's talk briefly about the legislators. Renee Elmer saying that she is not going to refrain from taking a paycheck. Howard Coble the same. We haven't checked on Walter Jones. Will this be perceived as heartless on their part in light of the fact that they are the Republicans and have and the president keeps trying to tag them with responsibility for this slim down?
Well. No, I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't want to tell anybody, don't take your paycheck. There are people in Congress who can afford not to take a paycheck, and some of them have already declined. They said they won't get paid while this is going on. But you got to remember that at least from the House side, they have been passing bills to fund much of government, and they have sent over individual bills, so it's not like a total government opening, but to fund the National Institutes of Health, to fund Veteran Affairs, to fund parts of government to make sure that things are running and that people are getting paid. And the Senate keeps voting all of them down, including Kay Hagan. You know, they're voting everything down that the House sends over to open up bits of the government.
All right, you bring up Kay Hagan. We're going to talk about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints, the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Our guest this afternoon at this time of day usually is Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, and we really appreciate him taking the time to be with us as we discuss this issue of national shutdown. You're listening to Viewpoints. Points on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Before we get back to our guest, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, very quickly to remind you, program brought to you by a great group of sponsors, Advanced Water Systems, the source for all things Kinetico. I mention this each and every day. The fascinating thing about Advanced Water Systems is, without any kind of government assistance, state or federal, they have bootstrapped themselves up from a single county of eastern North Carolina to now being the largest Kinetico dealer in the country. Now, they are always quick to point out the quality services that their customers receive from Kinetico water softeners and a wide variety of reverse osmosis water purifiers. But we also get a lot of testimonials about the outstanding service provided by Advanced Water Systems when any assistance is needed. So with that said, I will just remind you, Advanced Water Systems now is the best choice. It's the only choice for all things Kinetico, from an area west of, well, actually from Greensboro to the coast, from Hilton Head, South Carolina, all the way to Washington, D.C. The source, the one source, is only Advanced Water Systems for a wide variety, as I mentioned, of reverse osmosis water purifiers, the non-electric water solution for water softening services, and also air purifiers as well. I'm going to give you the toll-free number, rather than tell you about all their local offices they do have in Craven, Carteret, Pitt, Pender Counties, New Hanover, Cary, that area as well. That number, that toll-free number, 800-865-1208. That's 800-865-1208, or online at kineticonc.com. That's K-I-N-E-T-I-C-O-N-C.com. kineticonc.com. And that toll-free number again is 800-865-1208. Our guest, Francis DeLuca, joins us from Washington, D.C., where he is getting a firsthand experience on the national slim down, or is that partial shutdown. And Francis, thank you for staying with us. The question goes to the impact this shutdown might have on national races. We've announced yesterday here on the program, we had Taylor Griffin joining us to announce his candidacy for the 3rd Congressional District, the seat held by Walter Jones. He's seeking the Republican nomination. We have now at least two, and really four, pretty obvious candidates for the senatorial seat, Republican nominees. Talked to Mark Harris earlier this week. What impact might this event have on both Republicans and senators in office right now? Will this, in fact, be a burden for them?
Well, I think it, depending on the outcome of it, you know, it could help some people. But I think what you're going to see is pretty much it's going to cause most people to look negatively, if that's more negatively, if that's possible, on the legislature, Congress, and on the president. You know, President Obama's numbers have been dropping pretty much continuously in a slow way since the reelection. It went up after he took his oath, and then the rest of this year it's been coming down, and I think this is going to hurt, too. It can't help when the president says he won't negotiate with Congress, that when he refuses to negotiate, and he said that very clearly, that he's not negotiating.
Okay, that was the president. The question then goes to Kay Hagan, and she was on the air with me earlier this week, was very angry with the House. I thought a little aggressive, if you want to be direct about it. I don't know that it sounded almost like a panicked presentation, that she was protesting too much. Well, is there a concern from her perspective that this is not perceived well by North Carolinians, both Democrat and Republican?
Yeah, I think she's aware that this is not perceived well. I also think she is kind of in a bit of a pickle, and she probably has a right to be angry, because what's happened is that, you know, she knows kind of what was in the future, and it's happened since she was on the show, obviously, is the House of Representatives has been sending over individual mm-hmm. bills to fund individual parts of government, things like the National Institutes of Health so that children can get cancer mm-hmm. treatments, mm-hmm. The Veterans Affairs Department, and Harry Reid and the Democrats, and this includes Kay Hagan, uh-huh. are voting those bills down one by one.
Boy, I can see the commercials now.
See, that's
oh,
right.
Man.
You can Kay see
Hagan,
the advertisements.
Kay Hagan is opposed to a child getting cancer treatment. Oh, boy, I can see it now.
Well, and wow. That was one of the arguments about how cruel the shutdown was, mm-hmm. was that the NIH was not able to do these treatments of children with these rare forms of cancer, so in response, they sent over legislation and said, let's fund the NIH.
I didn't even think that thought, but now that you've mentioned it, I can write those commercials in my sleep. And that's going to be tough.
But the political strategy that the Democrats are facing is, we're not going to agree to anything other than what we want. It's kind of funny, because the president accuses the Republicans of holding a gun to mm-hmm. to people's heads and saying, if we don't get everything we want, nobody gets anything. But that's exactly what the president and Reid are doing, is they're saying, we either get a clean resolution, everything we want, or we will agree to nothing.
Right.
They will negotiate over nothing.
But associated with that is national health care, and we're already seeing complaints in North Carolina. And, in fact, North Carolina has been identified as one of the states with the highest exchange health policies coming out of the exchanges or the marketplace. This also would, it seems to me, would be a detrimental not only to the U.S. offices, the national offices, but possibly even to the state offices for anyone who is associated with support of national health care. Or might there be a theory that given time, say a year, this will all go away?
No, I don't think it's all going to go away. I think this is probably going to be just like in 2010, healthcare was the primary issue. I think, again, in 2014, it's going to be very much part of the issue, one, because of what you just said about the rates of what people have to pay, and two, this is a huge drag on job creation. It is hurting us in terms of creating jobs, and that's going to become more and more apparent as we get close to 2015, and the employer mandate goes into effect. Remember, they delayed the employer mandate 1 year.
They did delay the employer mandate, but in the process, the employers are all beginning to make adjustments anyway, as if it were kicking in 2014. All right, Francis, the fact that we've got Republicans and Democrats engaged in this dispute in Washington, D.C., the shutdown, national health care, could this, in fact, create enough backlash, I've used that term several times, politically in North Carolina, that there may be wholesale changes in both party administrations and as well as their candidacies? I mean, here Walter Jones has at least one, and there's a theory was presented yesterday that he may see two others joining the race for his office. Could this create enough of disruption that both parties will feel the impact?
Boy, that is really using. I'll have to have a very clear crystal ball to get that one right.
Well,
I'd have to say that if in the general election, and remember the generals are a little different, in the general election, I think it will be fought out over the health care law and the general economic state. And if it's anything like right now, that's not going to be good for the president's party, which you don't see. We have not seen an election where they threw all the incumbents out. We hear lots of talk about that, but usually it's the incumbents of one party or the other that get thrown out.
All right. The other issue, and one that's going to resonate, I think, in the political spectrum, is that of voter ID, and now the decision, of course, last week that the feds were going to sue the state of North Carolina. We've got to get to the Roy Cooper story here in a moment, but we'll do that after the commercial break. But I want to chat with you about the impact that's going to have on North Carolina. Is the legislature just going to sit back and rest easy on this, or might the legislature decide to be aggressive in selling its plan, which it has not done?
Well, one, the legislature is pretty poorly suited to selling a plan because
they've not done it for taxes. They've not done it for any of the legislation
they passed. They are a bunch of individual members. You really, it's hard to get any kind of cohesive message out through 170 or 120 or however many people. But the second thing, the whole federal lawsuit on the voting rights, on the voting bill, it is about the 2014 election. Make no mistake, it's no different than the whole Monday protest thing. This is about the 2014 election. It's about energizing a base of people to come and vote, and that would be the Democratic base, the activists, the real liberal wing of the party, and getting them excited and organized and getting their money and their manpower to push for turnout. So really what they've used the Justice Department for is as an arm of a campaign for the 2014 election.
Interesting observation. Will it have legs to last that long?
I think it's, filing it at this time, it'll still, the case could be actually coming up well into 2014. So, yes, it probably will have an impact. This is going nowhere. They are not going to overturn the law. Mm-hmm. They may win at one court, because that's why, if you notice, they filed it in the middle district, not in the eastern district. Right. They filed it where the state capital is. They filed it in Greensboro because there's friendly judges there.
Our guest, again, is Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. Of course, is their website. You're listening to Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. The afternoon, of course, wearing clothes to the end, and of course the Seafood Festival about to begin. But we still have politics to deal with. Interestingly enough, I've got to mention this to Francis. I'm surprised that we don't see an awful lot of politicians here in the East right now for the Seafood Festival. And considering the fact that Mark Harris and Tom Tillis have announced their decision to start running for U.S. Senate and for the seat, seeking the Republican nomination for the seat held by Kay Hagan, and of course the announcement yesterday by Taylor Griffin, one of apparently several others that are going to be considering a run for the 3rd Congressional District for the seat held by Walter Jones, you'd think that they would want to be in as many areas as they possibly can, because as one caller mentioned yesterday, it's going to be difficult raising money, and particularly in this environment economically, it's going to be a challenge. But sticking with this issue of seeking higher office, let's talk about Roy Cooper. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion that he's very interested in running for governor, and of course has complained about the funding of education in North Carolina, and he's also complained about the passage of the Voter ID Act, which he now says he's ably and willing to defend, in spite of the fact that he expressed his dissatisfaction to the point that he even asked voters to please write the governor and ask him to veto that bill. So does he have credibility on that idea, Francis?
Well, now talking on the vote, on the voting law that the Justice Department, remember that the Justice Department quoted Roy Cooper in their filing against the bill. So he would have to defend against own. The lawsuit that included his own words, using his own words to justify the
My mind would have to go into contortions to understand his explanation or his argument on that. Okay, I still go back to the ultimate question, and I'm still not satisfied with any of the answers. For whom does the North Carolina Attorney General work? He's elected by the voters of North Carolina. He is theoretically set up to defend the state of North Carolina, both taxpayers and the legislature. And now all of a sudden, he's not doing it. Well, let's put it this way. That one has little faith that he will do it.
Well, that's why this last session, the legislature put a bill that allowed the leadership of the House and Senate to intercede in any lawsuits against bills. And in this case, the legislature is going to be actively defending the law. They've hired attorneys, just mm-hmm. like the governor has made it. You know, the governor decided that Roy Cooper was not a credible lawyer to defend his stand, so he has hired a lawyer. So you're right. It is a little confusing about who, when you have a attorney general of a different party or who disagrees with particular stands of the legislature. But the legislature, to their credit, foresaw that problem last year
right.
and took care of it.
So prior to this past legislative session, North Carolina would unfortunately have, I say unfortunately, because I can't ask the Attorney General to defend something that has no heart to defend. Until this past legislative session, would North Carolina have been basically handcuffed to using Roy Cooper?
Now, the Attorney General has always been able to say he had a reason he could not
right.
in defer, and then the governor would hire another, would hire someone to do it. In this case, I think by him challenging the law preemptively, he kind of basically removing yourself from acting as the attorney of record defending the state. But we had a way previously, if the Attorney General wanted to remove himself or herself from the case, they could do it. What's happened now, though, is that the legislature said, we're not waiting for the Attorney General to decide if they can't do it. We are allowing ourselves to intercede with nobody else's permission.
And that being said, obviously, one has to wonder, why are we paying the Attorney General? You know, another item, and we won't belabor this now, but of course, one of the issues, and it's something that the legislature has really not addressed related to the Attorney General, and that is the failure of the Attorney General to have good oversight of the SBI labs, the laboratories. And we have seen so many of the cases that this SBI, and I shouldn't say so many, but many cases, the SBI has presented evidence or provided witnesses as specialists in the area of forensic science being overturned. And I'm to this day surprised that the legislature hasn't been more aggressive in dealing with that. Now, it will be interesting to see if possibly the Republican Party decides to mount a real candidate for the state attorney general, which it chose not to do in the last election. That's something I've often wondered about.
Well, I would assume that if Roy Cooper, as he's signaling, does run for governor next time, mm-hmm. that there will be a number of candidates for attorney general. That, you know, since that seat has not come open very often, and there are, you know, lawyers are always wanting to be something, you know, elective office. So I will, you know, I would be surprised if you didn't have a whole bunch of people vying for that office.
Interestingly enough, this could turn out to be a very competitive year for an off-year election, which is something at first I didn't anticipate. All right, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, our guest this afternoon. By the way, the website, nccivitas.org. Let's talk about the bad bill of the year. I see we've got a winner. Is that correct? House Bill 976.
That's right, the Gun Safety Act. And I would say I wasn't too surprised when I saw the final one. It was up against House Bill 100, you know, that had to do with the state mandating sick days for businesses, which I know near and dear to your heart.
You better believe it.
The government telling you how to run your business.
Well, but the government has gotten into the way of doing that. What do you mean, run my business? It's telling me where I can vacate and when I can recreate, let alone run my business.
But so, you know, I kind of thought that House Bill 976, the Gun Safety Act, would be the winner, and it is. And it just a host of bad ideas, and we had some people who said, you know, this bill will never become law. Why are you worried about it and everything? Well, it's a good idea for people to see what things legislators actually really propose. Because, yeah, some of these sound crazy, but, you know, you end up parts of them or all of them later on get into law.
All right. Included is the usual gun control wish list, the repeal of the Castle Doctrine. Tell us what the Castle Doctrine is.
The Castle Doctrine is basically allowing you to defend your home. You know,
okay.
it means that the presumption is that if someone's coming into your home, they intend to do bad.
All right. A liability insurance requirement for pistol ownership, a requirement for victims of stolen firearms to report it within 48 hours or be charged with a crime.
Yeah, that's right. So you have your gun stolen.
And you don't know it? You haven't looked in your gun safe for several months?
Yeah, and are you for whatever reason, you don't call the police. Maybe it was something that you wasn't real valuable. You'll get around to reporting it. But if you don't, suddenly you are now guilty of a crime.
And then a requirement for sheriffs to report any irregularities from background checks to the National Institute of NICS? National?
It's a national system.
Okay.
The problem there is, you know, is there a problem with the check? Was it a glitch in the system, mm-hmm. or was it someone really had something? And, you know, you start reporting every little glitch in the system to the national thing, and suddenly, Lockwood Phillips, instead of being an upstanding citizen, is, you know, ready, is the next person driving cars around D.C.
Which is another story in and of itself. And a law forbidding firearms from being stored anywhere a person under 18 can access it. We have a lot of parents who are actively engaged in teaching their children proper firearm etiquette and responsibility, take their children hunting all the time. Sounds to me like if they're out on a hunting trip, they would have to carry with them some sort of steel safe.
These are the people who are proposing this don't like guns. Just understand that.
No,
they
really?
Don't like guns.
I can't imagine
they don't
that.
Like people to have guns. They don't like people to shoot guns. Mm. I mean, these are people who are anti-gun. They may argue with me on that, but you know, the truth is they have an agenda, and the agenda is to outlaw guns.
Check this out at nccivitas.org. You can log on and just search Bad Bill of the Year. And the winner, of course, House Bill 976, the Gun Safety Act. Our guest, Francis DeLuca, there in Washington, D.C., to get a firsthand experience on the national slim down. And the streets are pretty quiet, huh?
It's pretty quiet. It's, you know, just normal hub and bub, but if anybody's ever been in D.C. around quitting time or, you know, in how crowded it is, nothing like that.
Francis, as always, thank you for being with us this afternoon. Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute has been our guest. You're listening to Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.